Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.
Welcome back, everybody. You are here on the Up Your Brave show with Natalie Cutler-Welsh on Reality Check Radio. Next up, I am so honored to be speaking with Rob Mokaraka. We are going to be talking about the sad yet very critical topic of suicide prevention and well-being. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Kia ora, Natalie. Thank you for having me. Thank you for doing what you do.
Well, you are a busy man, which says a lot. First, before we start, I wanted to do a little quick thank you to Jackie O'Connor from Heart Place Hospital, who connected us. She's the reason that we're here today talking about this topic. For those of you that don't know Rob, Rob had a mental and spiritual breakdown in 2009 in Auckland, New Zealand, where he was in a storm of suicidal ideation and provoked the police to shoot him dead. After being shot in the chest at close range, after multiple surgeries, multiple court cases, and multiple therapies, it took Rob 7 years to create an educational and healing experience called Shot Bro, Confessions of a Depressed Bullet, an experience that explores his real-life fight with depression, a bullet, and unresolved trauma, and the pathways of Aroha and hope that illuminated his way along his healing journey. Rob is invited to communicate to organizations in Australasia, and help create safe spaces to address mental health well-being and suicide prevention with Aroha, compassion, by sharing his story so that others don't feel alone and realize that they deserve as much help and Aroha as they need, as often as they need. Well, Rob, that is a very intriguing story. And if I can start things off by inviting you to share a little bit of it from your perspective now, looking back.
Looking back at that event in 2009, July 27th, I was lost at sea with no tools, no emotional literacy, no vocab, basically, to describe what I was going through. And also, I didn't know what I was going through because I had unresolved trauma. So I was living life and with the tools that I had. So emotionally reacting to things, which I thought was normal, but it's only normal for somebody with unresolved trauma. So on that day, I didn't want to be alive. And as you read out, I provoked the police to shoot me dead in a storm of suicidal ideation. So I'm very blessed that I'm still alive. That bullet almost killed me. And I used to say I was lucky, but my grandmother, who's now passed away, she said, you are blessed. You've got a second chance at this. So that's what I'm doing.
Tell me a little bit more about, you used the phrase emotional reactions. And what you said that you thought was normal, but was not normal, you know, because of the trauma. How was that presenting? How did that show up in your behavior or your dialogue?
I suppose also, another key thing that happens, I'll just go into it, is that people like to smile when they're feeling crap. So it's just to hide. It's a natural, normal societal mask. Now, I'm in the arts and entertainment industry at that time, so that's even more heightened. and I suppose it's the way you react. Like, it's really like a roller coaster journey. You don't realize that you think it's normal for you. Your reactions are quite extreme. Really upset, really angry, and then really calm and happy. Then really upset, really stressed, really calm, or just really down. Really down. So there was no in between, I suppose. I was constantly trying to find the in between, but I didn't realize after these multiple therapies that it's only normal for people who have been through emotional trauma, emotional physical trauma.
And tragically, I mean, you and then so many other people in New Zealand and beyond, but we're focusing on New Zealand at the moment, have been through trauma, physical and emotional trauma. How can we turn things around? I mean, does the future look bright with some of the work you're doing?
The future looks bright because I meet other people who have come from extreme trauma to create foundations and organizations to help people like us. Not like them, like us, because we're all versions of each other. Mm. So I've been quite, it's like, how do we arm ourselves, our own families? First place to look at is in the mirror, the hardest place to look. And so we can arm, I'm going around the Australasia with people who are hosting me to give practical tools and let people know, hey, you're not crazy. You're actually hurting. From the CEO to the gang member to the person who mows the lawns at the school, everybody is going through something.
You're not crazy. You're actually you're hurting.
Yes.
Yeah. Imagine if more people saw that, because I guess what a lot of people see is they're like, oh, that person's very rude or that person's really not stable, but they don't see that person's actually hurting.
Yes. And I get it sometimes. I realize people's vocab or reactions are really, okay, what will seem rude, but to the person speaking, they feel it's quite efficient. Mm. I'm being efficient, emotionally efficient. And so the other person's like, man, that person's rude. But they're just trying to get through their daily life mm-hmm. with the tools they've got.
So what a monumental event for you, just looking back before we move on to some practical things that we can do. Yes. Like your grandmother said, you know, so you were actually, it's not so much that you got in trouble and the police shot you. You think you were actually provoking them, like you kind of brought it on.
Oh, I don't think I know. Mm-hmm. I called them upon myself. And I had been asked by the police, why did you call us to do this? And I said, growing up as a little kid, I used to see the police shoot Māori on the news, right or wrong. And I thought, I'm a Māori. This should be easy. And when with this negative Spotify playlist that we've all got sometimes, my one says, I'm crap, I'm worthless, nobody loves me, let's get off this planet. And it just keeps looping. So I had that negative Spotify playlist. For a long time, but this time it really ramped up because I had a breakup from an unhealthy relationship I was in.
Well, and look what's come of it. It's quite amazing, isn't it, when you look back on your own life journey, and we can all do this, my lovely listeners, looking back on our own life journey and thinking of that pivotal moment that changed everything. It could have ended so differently for you, and it brought you to this place. How did you change that negative Spotify playlist, as you call it?
It's an ongoing journey, but I had a lot of unconditional love from close family, close friends. And what really made me shed some tears is hundreds of thousands of people from around New Zealand and overseas poured their love into the Marae TVNZ Facebook page. And all of a sudden, I thought, I was the only crazy person in the universe, and now it was opened up like, you're not crazy, you're hurting, Rob. There's hundreds of thousands of people out there who can relate. And so I go, okay, now I'm not the only crazy person in the universe, and I've got a problem, and I have to discover what it is. Didn't realize there was multiple layers from my childhood that I had to delve into with therapy and healing modalities.
How do we get to those layers? So if we are someone who, let's start with the person who's experienced the trauma themselves, and then we'll move on to how people can help them. How do we, if we know that we've been through some hard stuff, how do we start removing those layers, or, as you know, processing through what we've been through without, you know, having to relive it? Maybe you have to, or how can we release it?
Release is a great thing. And a big thing that comes up is people's pride gets in the way. People's pride, it gets in the way. I'm going to be okay. And then you're still exploding, and the family members are getting the repercussions of that person saying they're going to be okay. So first of all, when you're in trauma, you're in survival mode. You don't even know you're in survival mode. You've been in survival mode, who knows how many years. To you, it's just an everyday breath of fresh air. So understanding that, hey, maybe what that guy said or that woman said or whoever was talking, maybe that's a bit of me that I need to address. And it's very scary to go looking into self to get help for self, because you're afraid, usually, and I'm talking with hundreds of thousands of people around Australasia, they're afraid that what's underneath there. And if I open it, will I ever stop crying? And so there's a lot of fear. So it's just, and then another part of that is people go, there is no help. I've looked everywhere. There is none. And that's another survival instinct that kicks in, which is a protective mechanism. While I tried one modality, I tried two max. There's definitely nothing in the world left. So there's denial, and it's all protective mechanisms. So first of all, it's like, you're allowed help. You're allowed as much help as you need, as often as you need. Mm-hmm. Go shopping around. Try out things. That works. That doesn't work. This is okay. That's not so okay. But if you're not shopping for your well-being, then you're doing yourself a disservice and your family members around you. And it's tough. It's so tough, especially for males.
Mm. Do you think most people would start their shopping experience with just usual counseling, something like talk therapy, and then they're like, nah, I'm out. And they don't shop around enough. They just go to one shop, yes, and then they stop.
That's a common discussion that I've had with many people. And I tried everything. I said, how many? I went once, and then someone went twice. And I was like, wow, you must be exhausted. Then I'm saying this with love, because I was them. I'm just meeting other versions of me where I was on the journey. So it's easy to chat to them, because I'm like, oh, there's me and a different version. And it's just letting them know, hey, there is other things. And sometimes I just send them links and I go, do you choose? Because it's up to them which one they choose. You can't say, you definitely, this is a one-stop shop. See you later. Have a great life. You're like, no, I just place links and modalities and people that I've met that I believe in and organizations I believe in. And I say, kind of explore that and maybe take some time out for yourself to go and get the help you need and deserve.
Yeah, because a lot of people might go straight to like some government website and then they see, oh, it's a 3-month wait list or it's really expensive, and then they throw their hands in the air.
Absolutely. I'm sending them to places that are free, that are self-funded, well, NGO, non-government organizations.
Yeah.
So holistic with clinical backing, mm-hmm, or they might just want full clinical. But I've met these organizations, so I go, try these. I've walked alongside them because I'm looking for people who take instant referrals, not in 3 weeks, not in 6 weeks, because there may not be a tomorrow.
Well, that's right. That's the type of work you do. Those are the people you're dealing with. They're right, some of them, I guess, right on the edge. And it's this whole, we can see you in 3 weeks. It's just not going to work.
No, because they might be gone in the next hour. So it's like providing a safe place and a safe space in a community where they feel safe, followed by food to ground everyone afterwards. And then there's actual, I always take mental health resources and I invite local social services to attend with different modalities. So people have a face to the pamphlet, not just a pamphlet. And they go, oh, I didn't know you existed in my community. Wow, maybe I'll try this. Maybe I'll try that person. Now they see a human face. It makes it more communal, more caring. Mm. Instead of, here's my pamphlet, Rob. I can't make it, but show it to my community. I'm like, that's great. Maybe if you turned up, they might be able to see who you are. So, you know, I'm just trying to make those connections with people who are willing to go a little bit beyond the 9-to-5 barriers.
Well, and it does take, you mentioned pride earlier, it does take courage for people to not only look for help and do a proper look, like you said, shopping around and seeing what resonates or what works for them, but then to stick with it, because this is a new chapter in their life. Like this is a journey, right? It's not just, oh, go to a few sessions, good to go.
Absolutely. I'm just thinking, as you said that, my friend Jacob Leo Skilling, he put up a post and it was like, be patient with yourself because you're becoming someone you've never known before.
Mm.
So we've got to be really, I always say this to other people, practice being kind to yourself in the silence. Not that smiley face that you put on for your friends and your family. Practice being kind to you when no one's around. Instead of beating yourself up, because we're the worst. We're the first in line to beat ourselves up, unfortunately. And I'm just generalizing. So
yeah.
What are you saying to yourself in the silence? Change that negative Spotify playlist, which says, I'm crap, I'm useless, no one loves me, I'm crap, I'm useless, no one loves me. Boring, tiring. Practice changing that playlist. Why? Because you deserve it? Because you're loved, you're lovable? All these freaky words that I'm saying that freak people out, especially men.
Yeah. And tell me a little bit more about the work you're doing. I think you're doing some in Australia as well. You're going around in New Zealand and Australia to organizations. How is it being received? What kind of response are you having from the men? I'm sure some of them are arms folded, you know, looking grumpy at the start, but what is the process?
The process is it's in a tikanga Māori framework, which is inclusive of all cultures. So it's got a spiritual framework, which you can't see, but you can feel it once you're in there. I have a lot of non-Māori people go, did you put some, and I said, some what? Did you put some spirit into this? And I said, Wairua, yes, spirit. And I went, yes, I could feel it. And I went, great, because that's there to look after you and me. So we're bringing them under the korowai, the cloak of aroha, of tika pono aroha, to be truthful, to be correct in the way that we approach it. But aroha is also compassion, not just love. It's unconditional love and compassion, because we can give the truth to the cows come home, but if there's no warmth around it, it's too sharp for our family members to hold. It's like you're cutting with your
words. We can give the truth till the cows come home, but if it's too sharp, what did you say?
Yeah, you have to have warmth and compassion and love around it, because sometimes that truth is so cutting, they can't hold it. You're cutting them in two. Mm. And I say this no matter what culture or religion you're from, sometimes you have to step out of the Porangi River, the crazy family river you're born into, to get the external help you deserve, because you're not sure how far back that goes in your ancestry, because no one's talking about it. Mm-hmm. You're not one of one. You're one of many in your lineage that have been dismissed or sort of pushed aside. So get the external help you need outside of your crazy family river. And we love our families. I love my family, but I still need to get some help with some people with knowledge around this.
Well, that is such an interesting point, because so many people might be just so immersed in their own family culture. And I don't mean heritage culture. I just mean, you know, the way they do things. It's like, oh, well, we don't talk about that stuff. Or we always just, you know, grin and bear it. That's just what we do. We're really resilient. It's like, yeah, but you're not addressing how I actually feel. So that's so important for people to actually get some help or some perspective also from outside the family unit.
Oh, absolutely. And it's the hardest thing to do. If you try, like in an organization, they're trying to deal with it in-house. But what you don't realize in an organization, in a family, sometimes you're so institutionalized, you don't understand what's normal. There's a great proverb, what's normal for the spider is chaos for the fly. So I'm not from the system and I'm not related. So it's easier for me to come in under my korowai and wrap them in it, but utilize their knowledge as well, because underneath the hurt is actually all the healing tools that they've got. They don't know it. It's just they need a safe, authentic space for somebody like this fella or anyone else who are on the journey to open it up safely, to dig in deep in a safe way.
And how many people are in a room, for example? Like, is it a group of, let's say, eight men together, and do you find that there's a certain critical mass or a certain number that works well? Like, can there be too many for it not to work, or too few?
So I get invited to prisons to present. I get invited into military bases. Mm-hmm. So in a prison unit, it could be eight men, up to 30 men. At a military base, 200, 250. And maybe multiple presentations. So men, women, and for communities, men, women, and children for communities.
Yeah.
So it's up to the parents of us who are, like I say, 10 years of age and up. But for men, we've got a framework. Men are looking for permission from other men to heal. That's if I boil it right down, that's what they need. People don't know this. Men don't realize they're looking for permission. Do I have permission to be staunch? Okay, cool, I'll be staunch. Mm. Permission to be vulnerable? That's freaky. Are we allowed to be vulnerable in here? What my Samoan brothers and my Māori brothers say, we used to sing funny vulnerable. We used to sing funny tough Rob, not funny vulnerable. You're freaking us out. Mm-hmm. And I go, great. Got to stir that. You have to stir the stagnant waters to create change. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, nothing's going to ever change.
Well, and some of that, I would call it pushback, you know, unintentional pushback. Some of the pushback comes from our peers or our family who want the best for us, but they're like, wait a minute, we're happy. We're used to seeing staunch and happy Rob, who is this vulnerable guy. And sometimes that's the hard part, is for them to be open or courageous enough for you to actually show the other side of yourself. How can men start doing that if they've never done it before?
That's right. And I've been bumping into so many men's organizations and men's groups of different modalities around the country and some in Australia who are creating the changes. They're being the change that they want to see. And it's a massive breath of fresh air, especially for other men. They go, great, because men need to share. Men, like when I do public presentations or say high school ones, when it's a men only, they share stuff that perhaps they can't share with their wife. And as soon as one man speaks, he gives the whole room of men permission to breathe a sigh of relief. He gives permission to contemplate sharing what's stuck in their heart or their minds or on their shoulders. And so when another man shares, all of a sudden there's more light coming into a room full of brothers who are told this is a taboo way. Never approach it this way. But once again, myself and I can go with a sound technician who's got other skill sets and areas that I don't have. So we're both holding space for the men with the men. So it's a breath of fresh air. So we open and close with a karakia. We open the circle with a karakia and we close at the end with a karakia. And then we share food together. And then people get the connections to help that afternoon or that night, so they don't leave with a big hole inside themselves.
Are you able to share any examples or stories of people that have attended one of these sessions, you know, come through the other side, just to give us a little bit more idea of what is possible out there?
Okay, I'm going to share something. I won't mention his name. He's an amazing man. He's in his 60s. He attended one of my presentations 4 years ago. It was the second time in two nights. And I usually see, if you see my top here, it's got this heart shaped. Yes. I give these invisible hearts out to people in the front row. Even in the front row of a maximum security prison, if they take it, they take it. If not, no worries. And I tried to give this heart to this gentleman and he didn't take it. And he speaks, because I have a forum or a wānanga, which is at the end of every presentation, so we feel safe to share and then eat food afterwards. And he said, he spoke up in a room full of strangers because he came from another town into this particular town to watch it again. And he said, you came up to me, and this is twice I haven't taken those hearts, because in my life, anyone who gives me love, it's about to be followed by violence. So there's no way I'm taking your invisible hearts. And then this gentleman starts to talk about him and what happened to him as an 11-year-old boy. He was sexually abused by men. And it happened over a period of years. And at the time, he hadn't even told his wife. They've got adult children. And it was big for him. And we've been in contact ever since 3-4 years ago. Now he is a massive ambassador for multiple men's groups, helping across so many different genres of help. He is a beacon of light, and I just got to spend a lot of time with him recently because he was looking after us around a region. And he, the guy that we met 4 years ago, and this man here now. No, I'm not the be all and end all. I'm just a platform. Whereas when you feel safe enough in that platform, feel free to find another platform and another one, so you keep growing. And that's what he's done. So this man now is a beacon of hope for thousands of other men on different male platforms. So that's just one example. And then some people don't do anything for maybe 6 months or a year, or they might not do it for 2 years. The main thing is, thanks to people like Mike King and Boris Sogratov, two Māori males, they showed me the door in 2011, meaning they were being vulnerable, they were being open about their mental health journey, and I looked at these two men and think, this is a fantastical alien unicorn land that I've never been to before. I like it, but when I went home, my trauma said, it's a trick, they're liars, no one's that open. But in 2016, I was finally ready, thanks to those gentlemen who showed me where the doorway was. All I'm doing is opening the door of hope and aroha for human beings around Australasia. And if they're ready to take the tools, they're ready to go. If not, at least they remember where the doorway was. And that's all I'm doing.
Well, it's powerful work that you're doing. And I can see that it's having this ripple effect. Do you feel like, let's say, the next generation of men, because a lot of these men have been raised to not be vulnerable and to be the tough guy and things. Do you feel like there's a shift? I don't know if the humanity is the right word, but, you know, in society, do you feel like the future generations of boys will be raised differently? And so some of these problems might not happen, or what? How can we shift this trajectory so that we don't need so much of this work to be done?
You can still be tough, but you can still be kind. You know, those two can coexist. Strength, I say, be soft, not weak. be strong, not violent. And so, you know, we adults and parents do a lot of talking, but the kids are watching what their actions are. Like, great, cool little dad or mum, but we're watching what your actions are. So I just say, be the hero your younger self needed. It's very simple. What did your younger self needed when you were in distress? Think about it. And so you just place it in their hands. And we're not here to lecture anybody. We're just here to open portals of light. And they get to choose which one they resonate with. So, yeah, be the hero your younger self needed. Nothing changes if nothing changes. It will just stay the same.
And on that note, do you find for some people, I guess this was part of your journey, it has to get to that crunch point often for people to change their direction, like something, you know, nothing changes if nothing changes. And sometimes people, this is just human nature in my perspective, is that sometimes people, it takes some big event for them to finally, you know, make that life shift that, you know, the door's been there for a while, but they haven't walked through it until something major happens. What are your thoughts on that?
I totally resonate with what you said. All of that I've seen and heard, and I'm like, yeah, and that's unfortunate. But also, let's put in some steps before we even get there. Let's get some courageous conversations happening in our own household, which is scary. It's scary when you're all related. I know, because I've had to have these courageous conversations in my family up north in particular. And but you're planting seeds. So it's like, so I look at myself as a child, I look at my uncle and aunties, and sometimes the child has to be the adult for the parent.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because that generation, we're told to do the complete opposite to what I'm asking. It's so deeply ingrained. It's like looking through multiple layers of perspex to go, I can see you in there. It's okay. Hang on.
How do we have that courageous conversation? Do you have any questions that people, if they're sitting here listening to this interview and they're thinking, I would love to actually broach a few topics with my family, you know, how do they get that ball rolling? Are there some kind of questions that start things off and hopefully the people remain open to this conversation?
Well, that's the big, tough question. And I've had to do this. I've had to hold space for my family up north. I got asked by my dad, which I was pleasantly surprised. So he's like the chief of the family. And he asked me to facilitate it. And that's because he knows his formerly crazy son's got some tools. And so it's like, first of all, there has to be a safe space. Is it at home or is it a neutral space? And make some sandwiches. This may sound silly. Make some sandwiches, make some food. You're having a snack around the table. I'd like to address this. Is it okay? But remember, when you're from the same crazy family river, you're going to get some pushback. You're going to get some pushback. But you're just saying, I want to open it. And if they're not ready, they're not ready. Just know that this wonderful, magical healing that everyone's going to get in this moment may not happen. But at least you're planting the seeds. You have to be safe. The place has to be safe, because otherwise you're just going to get emotionally overwhelmed sometimes, not all the time, by family rhetoric and by family defensive mechanisms. So it's like some go, I want to help my family. I go, why don't you be the change?
Yeah.
Show them. Don't just tell them. Show them. And they'll see you and they'll go, how come that person's not being triggered? I'll try and trigger them. Damn it, they're not being triggered. What's wrong with them? And you're like, well, I've been doing some work on myself, family. So I just chuck those tools out there. There's no magical cure. I'm sure there's a thousand other ways.
Well, is there something in it, the conversation? It's actually a conversation, meaning in real time speaking. Yes. It's not that you've written a text and it's not that you've sent an email or something. Like it's an actual conversation, which is intimidating. It takes courage to do this.
Especially when you're all related, you're like, what the heck? I facilitate, like I said, in prisons and military bases. I was extra nervous facilitating from my own family. Brothers, brother-in-laws, sisters, nephews, nieces, my dad, my stepmom. I'm like, why am I nervous? I'm like, oh, that's why, because we're all related. But what my sister did, she did an awesome thing. She put us in a group chat. She said, I would like to address some things and I need some help. And Rob, can you facilitate? I was like, absolutely, sis. If the family want to, I'm right there. So the family all gathered. They all bought some food. And I facilitated it minus my presentation just to hold space and be a spokesperson for family members who didn't have or felt they didn't have a voice.
So on that note, one kind of, I guess I'm going to call it ingredient in this, or in this recipe of communication and vulnerability and honesty, is to have somebody facilitate who doesn't necessarily, like you said, you facilitated, but you didn't necessarily go into all of your stuff. Is that what you're saying? So someone should facilitate, but not try to get their points across while also wearing too many hats.
That's right. Have no hats. Just be the person to help hold space.
Yeah.
And then go, hold on, don't talk over that family member. Sorry, they haven't finished. Mm-hmm. I know you're the senior person. That must be great, but this person hasn't finished. Mm-hmm. And so everyone gets a voice. And make sure they get heard. And wait till that person's finished. It's hard when you're related. You just want to interrupt. But I did it. No, you shouldn't have. But I... And they haven't finished speaking yet. Mm-hmm. Can we let the end of the sentence, please? Thank you. So just sort of make the ground rules a bit clear. It's hard. Once again, you're from the same crazy family river. Very difficult. But it's very courageous when you can do it.
It is. But I can definitely see the benefit of having somebody who's in the loop, like a family member, like you facilitating. I can just remember a few heated conversations over the past 4 years because of the COVID thing, not anything else, but where no facilitator. And I would say things like, still talking, because they interrupt me. And I just very rudely reply, still talking, because we don't have a facility. It's hard when you don't have anyone holding space, as you say.
Yeah. And I wasn't there to get my point across. Mm. I was just there to make sure that the voices that needed to be heard got a voice and they were listened to and acknowledged. And then what is the plan forward together? Together, not just a little one part of the family. What are collectively? How are we going to support? So once again, very difficult, easy to do with people you're not related to, but I have had to do it. And I was really grateful, pleasantly surprised it happened.
That is a tribute to you. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Up Your Brave show. I'm talking today to Rob Mokaraka on the topic of suicide prevention and well-being. Rob, can you give us a few more things? So this family meeting that is facilitated is one amazing strategy that can really help to deepen connections and bring things to the surface that maybe will have been buried for a while. What are some other practical things or concepts that people can maybe do or consider if they're wanting to support themselves or someone else who's been through trauma, and maybe it is an issue of suicide prevention, but definitely in contributing to their well-being?
Well, I do this thing and I call it the tight three, or three kaitiaki. And it's three people that you nominate, that you ask to be your support person, your kaitiaki, your guardian. Three people that you can text or call anytime, night or day. So it makes you think more deeply about who's in your circle. Mm-hmm. And so if you're that person helping that loved one or friend in distress and it escalates and it becomes too much for you, call the other two support people, the other two kaitiaki. Now, all of a sudden, you've got a circle of aroha and light around that person swirling in the storm. And collectively, you can guide them to the shores of sanity between the three of you. So I say start with three. I've actually got five now. But the number one on my dining list is my first cousin, Clint Edmonds, who comes on the road a lot with me. I trust him with my life. And this is another thing which is difficult for family members. Practice listening without judgment. The moment my friend, who's a survivor of sexual abuse, here a male, he's now a social worker in Christchurch. And he said to me, he helps other survivors of sexual abuse. And he said, Rob, my job is not to heal these men. My job is to listen to these men without judgment so they can start their healing journey. Because it's so corrosive to be shut down and dismissed over years and years on top of your trauma. You develop a fortress around your heart. So listen without judgment, practice that. And we're only there to hold the space, not the problems of the family, not the problems of the community. Hold the space. It takes practice. So when I'm very tired and I'm facilitating for a community in trauma and I start to physically lean forward and emotionally, I say to myself in my mind, lean back, Rob, you're a bit tired tonight. Remember, hold space, not the problem. And I go, that's right. So I'm just talking to myself quietly and I sit back in my seat and keep breathing and holding space. and then we close with karakia, and then we eat food to ground ourselves. And later on, I will go to a river, a lake, an ocean, and I'll just go for a cleanse just for myself and do karakia for myself and whoever's with me on the road with me.
That's right, because holding space is something that some people will find easier than others, and some people might take too much, like you said, on board, and they'll hold on to those problems. It's not their job. So I love the fact that you have a ritual, like a practice for yourself to cleanse after holding so much space.
Yeah, I have to, quite a lot, and it's healthy.
Absolutely. So for those people listening, have a think about who your three Kaitiaki might be, your nominated guardians that you might wrap around you, three people or maybe four, that you can call upon, and they can call upon each other if things escalate. This is a great strategy that some of our listeners, I think, will take on board, whether for themselves or a loved one in their life. I actually think possibly most people know someone who has been through or is currently in some sort of suicide or potential situation. And so even that small practice, it's so simple, but such a good strategy.
Yeah, and it's like that person who's in deep distress thinks nobody cares, thinks they're so unlovable. And sometimes I just feel like I could be talking to them on the phone, but if I paint a picture, I've got a little torch and I'm sitting alongside them in the darkness so they know they're not alone. And I'm just walking alongside them. They just need to know that someone's shoulder to shoulder on the phone or in person. So I really encourage trying to meet that person for a coffee. I just want to share this. Your safety as one of the three Kaitiaki is paramount. If it's too much for you, always visit that person in pairs. So, and take some food for them, because just a simple cake or a sausage roll or pie, sometimes a simple gift like that shows that, oh, well, people do care about me. I thought nobody cared. So just safety is really paramount too. If that person's swirling and you go, I'm not sure if I should go there alone, well, don't. Call the other two or call one of them. I've done this many times. I said, let's go in pairs. We'll take some food over and see how they are. So we don't get stuck in that vortex that that person doesn't know they're creating.
Okay. So from that, make things memorable. I'm going to go. So it's numbers and nourishment. So safety and numbers, two of you to go together, bring some nourishment, bring some kai, bring some food. It's an offering. It's a gesture, but also you're right. It's like when you have some food, it makes things, people just feel like they're more connected, and then you can maybe have a courageous conversation.
Yes. And it's just very simple. And it's just, we call it whanaungatanga. It's just, you're making them feel like connected to your extended family. They're part of your extended family. We're sharing food together and grounding at the same time as breath and light is coming into our conversation.
What about young people? So obviously a lot of people know about, you know, social media, which has been prolific over many years now, but are you seeing anything with teenagers or 20-somethings or even tweens in terms of this topic of suicide prevention? What wisdom do you have for parents of tweens and teenagers?
It's a great question. I've had this come up in multiple wānanga and multiple forums. And one parent, I think it's a, this is my perspective, I think it's a great opinion, is like, what is your tikanga framework around social media and internet at your house? What are the protocols? What time does the internet get turned off? Parents as well, what time? Because you go, get off the phone. Why don't you get off the phone, Dad? What did you say?
Yeah.
And so I suppose it's like you have to get a collective buy-in. You have to get a collective buy-in because, once again, kids are watching what you do, not what you say. But like anything, you got to find balance. This internet can be a black hole, a vortex to suck in all the darkness. But if I look at it this way, is that teens also have access to more tools than I've ever had. If there's a, there are positive teenage, it's great when teenagers are speaking to teenagers in a positive way, because they go, oh, wow, they're doing it. It must be cool. It must be cool to do get well-being modalities and look after ourselves and do eat well. And I was like, cool. They don't need to hear it from mum or dad. They want to hear it from their peers. So I encourage parents to get the help they need first, not just help the one that they're helping. What does mum and dad need? Mum and dad needs to upgrade their knowledge. So go get some support around that. So when you're helping your teenager, you've got a bit more tools so you don't come off. Loving can almost come across like this. Get off your device. Get away. Go to sleep. It's like, that doesn't sound loving to them. But I understand mum and dad are stressed. They've got a 9-to-5 job trying to get make ends meet. So fine. Choose your language. Choose your language. Make sure there's a framework that the whole family buy into. It's very difficult. Mum and dad might sneak on the internet to play a game later on at 10:30 at night. But I'm just chucking this into the pot.
Yeah.
And we'll boil it down as a collective and hopefully some of this sticks for somebody listening.
We recently did that at my house. I mean, I was more coming from the EMF, the frequencies of having the internet going all night long. I was like, can't we just turn it off at night? But also obviously for the teens, because otherwise if they're on gaming, you know, they just don't know what time it is and suddenly an hour goes by. And so that can definitely be something for all of us to review. Is there anything physical that you do that benefits your well-being, whether that be certain exercises or nature time?
Well, I've got a new addiction. It's called Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I've been told a long time ago, Rob, you talk about mental well-being. This is really great for your mental health. So I tested it out a year and a half ago, and I'm addicted. And it makes me very present. And it's a very tactile martial art. And it's great for getting over your emotional triggers and your emotional protective mechanisms. And if you're feeling in danger, you just tap. You don't even have to be in an awkward position. I'm just feeling distressed. Tap, and it stops. And you get to learn new skills and techniques. And what I love about it is, I am just a student. I am not there to hold space for anyone. I am there to simply learn. 99% of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu are people I've met around Australasia are awesome human beings. They're always welcoming to me, and I'm just a white belt. And so it's really great for my mental health to get out of my head into my body.
Yeah.
And I also use ocean and rivers and lakes to go in to dip and cleanse myself. I really find that if I need something, I'm feeling overwhelmed, I'll go there. And just have a little dip for myself and go, okay, refresh, reset, let's go, Rob. So it's whatever you get, exercise, movement.
I think that you raised such an important point there, because in life we have certain labels, you know, we have certain roles. Somebody might be a CEO of whatever, or, you know, a managing director of something, or like you're a leader, you know, I'm a speaker. And sometimes we need places and spaces that we can go to where we're not that, you know, where we're not in charge. Like, I remember recently I went to the Family First conference, and I am a speaker and I love being on the panel and I'm an MC, but I was just a person. I was just someone in the audience, and I was happy. I just wanted to learn. This is not something I know a lot about. I just wanted to absorb and to chat to whoever was sitting beside me. I think it's so important that we have these places and spaces for us to not be in charge.
Yes, I totally agree. It feels quite refreshing. As you said, sitting back and getting knowledge, you go, wow, this is great. And we need to keep filling up our own kete so we fuel ourselves with knowledge, but also with a lot of light, keep refueling light. Because our job is basically just to show that person their own light so they learn how to nurture that light while we're gone for themselves and their family.
Well, yes. And on that note, similarly, on the flip side, I guess, is there's so many of us that we're used to being in charge. We're used to leading and organizing and things. But there's so much potential out there with people who just haven't had the opportunity or the confidence maybe to do that. So how important is it that we not turn the tables, but that we nurture somebody else or mentor some of these people that are, you know, maybe struggling or maybe not, but just to step into more of a position where they can maybe be a leader. We want to step back sometimes. How important is it for them to have a chance to actually step up and lead?
Absolutely. They have to, we have to provide that doorway so they can feel empowered. Once again, they can watch, and well, like martial arts. I'm watching a move, a technique over and over again because I'm a little slow. I need to see it 10 times. Some people need to see it twice, but I need to show me 10 times. Mm-hmm. And until I feel confident to start to practice it and find myself within the technique, it's the same with speaking. It's the same with holding space. you know, that find a mentor that you really admire and follow them and see what they do and then mold it for your own personality so you feel safe in who you are. And I had this, I was wanting to share this. I got invited to Canterbury University to speak at a Māori Future Symposium. All these academics and people doing amazing work, and I was having a mini anxiety attack because I was a speaker. And but there's a section called the provocateurs. And I was one of the provocateurs outside of the academic realm. But and I must have been heavily breathing because my turn was coming up. And this lovely auntie, she turned around, auntie meaning she's of that age, she turned to me, she looked at a pamphlet, she knew I was up next, and she said, "Kia kaha e hoa, don't worry, you're an expert in what you do." And I just, she didn't know me. I was just, I didn't realize it's a bit audible. And I went, okay, am I an expert in what I do? But you're knowledgeable in what you do. And when I spoke, I realized my knowledge is outside of what they know and their knowledge is outside what I know. It's just all us collectively sharing from our perspective. So be brave in who you are. Practice working alongside people you admire.
Well, you know, if you look back at your life, are you surprised or not with what you're doing now? Does it totally make sense, or are you surprised by it?
Well, in July 27th, 2009, I was lying outside on my street on the road with a Glock 9mm bullet in my chest. I had no idea I'd be doing this. No idea. So I think back to Hurt Rob then, to what I'm doing now. I go, wow, it's surreal. But I've met other people who've gone through traumatic times, and we've met at conferences. And I've had a man in a wheelchair, a good friend of mine, Wayne Forrest. He's an inspirational keynote speaker, and he said to me, you know, that happened to you, so you can help other people now. And we hadn't really spoken. I was like, I don't know how I know this, but I agree, brother. Mm-hmm. And then I saw him share his story, and I realized, wow, his journey, my story, our journey, we're here to, as a dear friend of mine, Anita said, we're here to walk each other home safely.
We are here to walk each other home safely. And that is the work you do with suicide prevention and well-being. Rob, I know you're doing so much already, but if you were to truly up your brave in the remaining months of 2024, what would that look like for you?
A big presentation for the New Zealand Police Force to help them look at their own modalities, their own methodologies, not just how they interact with communities, but how they interact with themselves and how do they defrag? What is their mental, spiritual practice? I'm really aiming for that. That is one of my goals to present to police. I present it on military basis, but no invitation yet. So I'm nervous, and I bring in a team of people that I really admire to come alongside me and to hold space for the police, and whatever's said there will stay there. Just same thing in communities and military bases. What's said and shared there in that space is sacred and collectively. So that, and also international. So Hawaii is on the card. I want to go further afield and learn from other cultures. So I just want to, as we're sharing, we're learning. So that to go globally, basically, that's where I'm aiming for.
Well, going globally sounds good. And I love that you are wanting to help the police to defrag, as you said, and help with their mental and spiritual. If anyone's listening and you've got some connections or opportunities, then you can get in touch with Rob. Where can they find you and get in touch?
Well, for my email, I'm all lowercase rob@toitudama.nz. Toitudama means creative illumination. So toiturama.nz. On social media, I am shotbro_Instagram, shotbro_RobMukaraka, all lowercase.
And are you on TikTok?
On TikTok, I'm all lowercase @shotbroaroha.
Amazing. I'm sure somebody can find, if you're looking for Rob, you can look in all of those places. Otherwise, as always, if you want the link to the replay, you can look on our replay page. I'm going to put the links there to his social media as well. Or also, we'd love to hear from you either for Rob's contact details or reflections or questions you've got from today's interview. You can send us a text 2057 or inbox@realitycheck.radio if you're more of an email person. What is coming up for you, Rob, in the next 3 or 6 months?
Well, already I'm invited to the community of Fielding, August the 10th. I just had a meeting online on the phone, invited to present in the community of Masterton, August the 12th. I've got a military conference coming up presenting at some September 11th or 10th, September 10th military conference. So, and then Hawaii, mid-September, we're just waiting for the green light from their side of the ocean.
Amazing. Well, it sounds like your global impact is already underway and it is so needed, but I really think that this, the work you're doing and the work that we're all doing, it's all part of shifting the way that we all show up in the world. So thank you for everything you do. Is there anything you want to say or share with our listeners before we wrap things up?
I actually want to thank you for being a beam of light in the world. It refreshes my spirit, my weight on my mind, meeting people like yourself, honestly, truly. And to our family and friends out there, you're not crazy. You're hurting. Crying is better than dying. And you are allowed as much goddamn help as you need, as often as you need.
So powerful. Thank you so much, Rob Mokaraka, for joining us today.
Kia ora, Natalie. Thank you so much.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. Please go ahead and share this interview with someone in your life that is ready to hear it.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.